This is the On the Line podcast.
And we're back to another episode of the On the Line podcast. Here again with Noah. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. Got sports coming back. Pretty excited for that.
Sports coming back. I'm pumped, man. We apologize for releasing this episode a little bit later in the week. I actually was sitting for my CPA exam, which was really tough, but we'll see. We're back on a Wednesday, and we're excited. We got a lot of things on the menu today. We're going to start off with a little game Noah and I are playing where we're going to say different players and what their Madden rating should be, and then we're going to say what they actually are. Then we're going to go into the In the News segment. We're going to talk about NFL preseason, NBA restarting, and the MLB coming back. And then we're going to finish up the show with teams that Noah and I felt were very comparable with their rosters, but who's going to finish better in their division and in their conference. So, you know, it's going to be a great show, and let's get started right now. So let's start off with the Madden ratings. And you know what? I don't get too into Madden ratings just because they're not really indicative of how a player really plays. Some of them are just absurdly low, and some players are just really high. For example, we were talking about it before the show, like Rob Gronkowski, he's rated a 95, and the guy hasn't played in a year. It's just like some of those ratings are kind of, it's just crazy. You don't know where they get those numbers from. But Noah, I'm going to read you a few players, and I want you to tell me what you think their rating is going to be in Madden, and why you think that's their rating. So, you know what? Let's start off right here. I'm going to give you one. And let's start with Chris Godwin. What do you think his rating is?
Well, Chris Godwin was one of the highest rated wide receivers last year in terms of his catch rating. So his catch has to be super high. He's a great route runner. He went for over 1,000 yards. I think it was over 1,200, actually. I'm going to say Chris Godwin's a 91. Right there. I think Mike Evans might be a little higher, but I'll give Chris Godwin 91.
Close. I mean, he's an 88, which I think is a little bit low for him. I don't think that's really, I don't know if that's really fair for Chris Godwin, but yeah, he's right there in an 88. I would have definitely put him, like you said, around the 91, 90 area. I think that he's that good, but I think that's a little bit low for him. Let's move on to another player. Let's see. I'm going to try and give you a tough one here. Okay, here we go. Buda Baker, safety for the Cardinals. What are you going to rate him?
Well, Buda Baker is some guy that we sort of missed on when we were doing our safety rankings, because we went back and looked at his stats and he had over 100 combined solo tackles, which is absolutely absurd for the safety position. I mean, I know the guy's fast. He's obviously extremely strong. I don't know if they're going to give him the credit of giving a 90 just because you sound like it's a little surprising coming from you. So I'm going to give him an 85. I would give Buda Baker an 85.
Almost spot on. He got an 86, which to me is a little bit low. Like you said, we didn't give him his credit for the safety when we did our safety rankings, but he is one of the best, and it's a little bit low for him in my opinion. It just doesn't make much sense. Let me give you another one. Let's go on the offensive side of the ball, and I'm going to go with Leonard Fournette.
Leonard Fournette. I mean, Fournette's extremely strong in terms of his power running, and he's actually a surprisingly good pass catcher for them. I mean, he's on a bad team, but he did rush for over 1,000 yards last year. I think he had his best season, but he didn't have the touchdowns last year. I think he only had like a handful of touchdowns, so this one's tough. I don't think he's going to be in like the top 10 for the backs. I'd still give him like an 86, 87, something like that.
That's pretty fair, but he actually got rated an
83.
All the way down at 83. Wow. Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy. He is better than that, in my opinion. I think he's better, and I think that's kind of insulting to him. But I'm going to give you one more. What do you want, offense or defense?
Well, we've done two offense, so why don't you give me a defense. Let's go defense.
Okay, let's go defense. Let's go Pittsburgh Steelers Bud Dupree.
Bud Dupree. I mean, Bud Dupree's another guy that had a career year last year for them, playing alongside T.J. Watt, and playing in that defense with Devin Bush and Minka helped out too. I think he had over 10 sacks last year, so I mean that's going to give him a huge boost. So this is another guy. I think he's in the 80s, but I'm going to guess they're not going to give him the credit because he's not a big name. I'd still give him around an 85. I'd do 84, 85.
He actually got an 80.
An 80. Wow, that's pretty low.
That's really low for him. I don't think that's not really fair, honestly. An 80 for him. He was one of the best in terms of sacks last year at the outside linebacker position. He got ranked the same rating as Jason Pierre-Paul, who didn't have nearly as good of a year. I think that's kind of insulting, an 80 for him, but I guess that's it.
Yeah, dude. I mean, these Madden ratings, like you said, they're not indicative of how good the player actually is. And at the beginning of the season, too, obviously players are going to move around in season when games are going on. People are going to shoot up higher. People are going to drop lower. But yeah, some of these ratings at the beginning of the year, I don't know who's in charge of this, but someone's missing something. But we'll switch it over here. It'll be my turn to lead the guessing game. So I'll start off on the offensive side of the ball with one that I thought everyone on the Twitter sphere thought was a little controversial. Saquon Barkley. What do you think Saquon's rated?
Wow. He's a big name, and he's one of the best running backs in the league. He's a top three back, and they gave CMC a 99. So I'm going to go 95, 96.
Saquon Barkley got a 91.
Got a 91, did you say?
Saquon Barkley got a 91 from the Madden ratings.
That's really low. His talent and production, he's one of the most, if not the most complete back in the league in terms of rushing, and he can catch the ball, and he is that Giants offense pretty much. He's the most valuable player on that entire team. Wow, that's really low for him. I mean, I guess if they're playing off last year, his last year's stats were not that good compared to his rookie season. But I mean, Madden doesn't do that clearly if they have Rob Gronkowski at a 95 and the guy didn't even play last year. So I think that's kind of crazy. I think it's also interesting, like you said before, like they give pretty crazy high scores to some players, and they also give some low scores to players. But like, if you look at any other EA sports game, like no one's a 99 in NHL. Like nobody gets to the 99 rating. Everyone starts lower and they work their way up. I think that's really how it should be. But I feel like Madden doesn't do that. And since they don't, and they're giving out what they gave out 499 players, then you got to rank Saquon higher. That's just insulting to have him at 91.
Yeah, that's interesting you mentioned, like, the whole 99 club aspect. When you look at other sports games, and, like, barely any players get a perfect rating. And like you said, in NHL, haven't seen a 99 in forever. I know even NBA 2K players barely get the 99 rating. And they have guys like LeBron, Giannis, James Harden, Steph Curry, those guys not getting 99. So, but it's just how Madden works it, I guess. But Saquon was the sixth-ranked running back. I'll give you that stat. He was the sixth-ranked.
No way.
Yeah. Sixth rank behind
Zeke, CMC, Derrick Henry,
Nick Chubb, and Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook. Higher than Saquon Barkley. Dalvin Cook is a beast, but he should not be higher than Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I think, look, Madden clearly got that one wrong, but I'm sure they'll adjust it. But we'll move on here. I'll go to the defensive side of the ball. What do you think about cornerback Tre'Davious White? What do you think he's rated?
Ooh, he's a top three corner in the league, maybe the second best corner in the league. I would give Stephon Gilmore, what was he? He's ranked at 99. Got to give Tre'Davious White. I'd give him probably like a 93, maybe, like a 93. He's really good. And I think that he's only going to get better. I think a 93 is good for him.
I do think 93 is good, but Madden did not think that that was good enough. So he actually is a 90. They don't think he's that good.
I thought 93 was low. I thought he was going to be higher than that, honestly. Geez, 90?
90. He's and the fifth-ranked corner.
But, like, if you think about it, like, think about this. Like, the gap between Gilmore and Tre'Davious White, there is a gap, but it's not that big. Like, that is essentially saying, like, Gilmore is – he is in a league of his own, but he's not, like – you're saying that Tre'Davious White is 10 Madden rating, whatever points, whatever that means. You're saying he's that much less than Gilmore? I don't see it. I don't. I think that he's one of the best corners in the league.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, Tre'Davious White had more tackles than he did last year. And Tre'Davious White had 6 interceptions, and Gilmore had 6 interceptions. So I do think Gilmore is better. They definitely got that right, but it doesn't mean that Tre'Davious White is, what, 9 total Madden rating points below him. And he's only the 5th-ranked corner, which is really surprising, too. They put Jalen Ramsey, Richard Sherman, and Jair Alexander, along with Stephon Gilmore, in front of Tre'Davious White. So I think that that's a little absurd.
That is.
All right, we'll go back to the offensive side of the ball. We already mentioned Gronk, but we'll go with another guy that didn't play last season, A.J. Green. What do you think A.J. Green's rated?
A.J. Green, he is really good talent. If I was going to rate A.J. Green now, coming off injury, and you know he hasn't really been as productive as he has in the past, he should probably be around, you know what, I'd put him at like an 86. I mean, you just don't know where he's going to be, 85, 86. You just don't know what kind of shape he's going to be in when he comes back.
I agree. I think that's where A.J. Green belongs. He's at an 88, which isn't too far off there. I think that they're giving him more the benefit of the doubt from all of his past seasons, and they're going to assume that he's going to come back from injury pretty strong. I don't feel like that one's too outrageous. I mean, but Chris Godwin's the same rating, and he just had an unreal year last year. So, right. But I do Godwin think it's close. Better. You think Chris Godwin's better?
Next season, I think Chris Godwin's definitely going to have a better season. Granted, he has Tom Brady thrown to him now, but I just think in terms of he's much younger, and I think he's got better speed, and you know, health clearly is not a concern as of right now for him. So I think that he could definitely have a better season than A.J. Green will.
See, I like that take, but I do think that this is probably one of the closest Madden ratings that they got right. But yeah, you could say it's a little high, a little low, but I feel like this one's pretty spot on. But we'll go with one more guy here. Let's go back to the defensive side of the ball. What do you think Roquan Smith is rated? We were talking about Roquan Smith a couple of shows ago, so I'll give you him.
Yes, Roquan Smith was my 5th best linebacker in my linebacker rankings, just because I think his potential is unbelievable and he could have a breakout season this year. He led the entire Bears team in tackles, and he missed a few games last year. I think he missed 3 or 4 games last year, and he still finished the most tackles on the team. And that team, don't forget, has Khalil Mack. So that's kind of crazy, you know, that he was able to do that. Roquan Smith, he's young, injured. I would still give him in the 80s. Probably the way Madden's been doing it, I'd probably give him like an 85. I think that's enough. 85 is perfect for him, and it gives him room to grow. And I think he could really reach almost that 90 threshold by the end of the season, but I'm going to go 85.
Yeah, I would say that that's pretty fair. I'd give him the 85, 86, but Madden, of course, wants to rate him a little lower. They gave him an 83. What do you think about that?
That's okay. I mean, I see why they did it, just because he hasn't been the stud yet, and an 83 is kind of there. I mean, after seeing Bud Dupree only be an 80, and then you have Roquan Smith be an 83, it's kind of like, well, Bud Dupree's actually proven through at least one season that he is one of the best at his position. Last season, Bud Dupree was definitely a top outside linebacker, and he still got rated an 80. So I think that 83 is kind of good. I think they kind of got that right, too. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of shocking. I have one more for you. It's kind of a wild card here.
Okay.
Justin Tucker.
Oh, Justin Tucker. All right. This is one guy I feel like should be in the 99 club. They should give a special teamer a 99.
But I agree.
I don't think that they're – he doesn't have it, right? I don't think so. You said they only gave out 4.
No, four. They gave, well, who got it? Mahomes, CMC, Gilmore, and Michael Thomas, which I don't really agree with Michael Thomas getting it, but he was on paper the best receiver in the league last year.
Yeah, I mean, again, I feel like Justin Tucker, he's automatic year in and year out. He's clearly been the best kicker for however many years in the league, but if he's not in the 90s, I don't know what Madden's on, but I'll give him a 95. I think he deserves a 99, but I'll just say 95.
I agree. A 95 is perfect for him. He got an 87. You believe that? Best kicker in the league gets an 87.
Yeah, like, what is they rating it off of? Like, of course they can't throw. Like, you got to give it to him based off of what job he does.
His kick power rating and his accuracy rating are both 98. And it's like, well, that's his job. If he has a 98 at what he does best, then why is he only an 87? Because his tackling is a 13. They don't pay the guy to tackle. They pay the guy to kick the ball through the field goal posts. That's kind of absurd. But, yeah, I thought that was pretty crazy. I thought that he should be, like you said, why not give a 99 to a special teams guy? The guy does not miss. The guy just did, like, why not? He's the best at what he does. Just because he's a special teamer doesn't mean that he can't be a 99. Like, in Madden, field goals are just as important as – you know, other positions. When you're in a tight spot and you need to kick a game-winning field goal, you might want a 99 guy that can boot it 50 yards. So I think that's kind of low for him.
Yeah, I mean, the dude's made back-to-back all-pro seasons. So, and like you said, he's just automatic. And it's not just from, like, 30 yards, 35 yards. It's anywhere on the field. You just know this guy's probably going to make this, which is unreal, and that's so great to have on their team. I mean, the Ravens are so lucky that any time that Justin Tucker's on the field, defenses and other teams are expecting, okay, they're going to get 3 points here. But, yeah, like you said, he probably deserves the 99, but we'll move on. You can't pay the guy off of his tackling rating and his juke rating. I don't think Justin Tucker's juking out anyone anytime soon.
As of October, end of October, an article came out that Justin Tucker was the fastest kicker to 1,000 points, and he's the most accurate kicker in NFL history with a 90.6% accuracy. Like, that's pretty absurd. Like, he's the best kicker of all time, pretty much, is what they're saying.
Yeah, and I would argue that he has, like, at least 10 years left.
Yes, yes. He's one of the – he will surpass the legacy of Vinatieri. It's just going to be, you know, we'll wait and see, but time will only tell when he finally calls it a career, and he is still the most accurate kicker in the league. So let's move on to the In the News segment, where we talk about news stories that happened over the past week. So this one actually came out recently. The NFL said that they're not going to be doing a preseason this year. It's kind of smart, just because it's really hard for players to you know, get into camp and then get into game shape and take away those weeks when they're doing preseason when the players don't like it. But I also kind of think the other way, where maybe a preseason game could be good for when they have to run through whatever COVID procedures they're going to have to do at the stadiums and things like that. Plus, it might get you into game shape, you know, get you up to speed a little bit. Noah, what do you think about the no preseason rule?
Yeah, like you said, there's some good and there's some bad to it. From a good standpoint, it's going to limit the injuries. I know people have sort of been in the uproar about that over the last couple of years, that you see some big-name players go down in either training camp or preseason due to injuries. So I don't want to say guys can take it a little easier, but there's definitely going to be less risk for injury playing in those games. And like you said, if they would have gone through a COVID situation where they could have simulated, you know, what they're going to do on a game day situation in terms of the procedures of dealing with COVID-19, that would have been a positive if that was there. But on the negative side, not having these preseason games, it sort of limits what some new guys and some unknown guys can do in terms of them having the opportunity to make a roster. They're not going to have that audition stage. They're not going to have those four games to run through and showcase their skills that would allow them to help make the team. They've reduced the rosters from 90 players down to 80 now that they're not playing preseason games. So there's 10 players there that already will get released. So What do you think about that? Do you think it's a little unfair to some of these guys that are coming in, you know, undrafted, low picks, or just trying to make the roster in general? I mean, like, this is, those are 10 jobs right there on every NFL team. So that's 300 plus jobs right there that it just got taken out of the picture.
Yeah, it's kind of unfair. But what the NFL teams might do is put some of these guys on the practice squad. But it is kind of unfair. They don't really get their shot. So that's kind of sad. But you know what's going to be hard for the NFL is that, like, if you look at NBA, the NBA is in that bubble, and they reported yesterday that they had no COVID cases, which is great because players can't leave the bubble. The NHL is doing kind of the same thing where they're doing a bubble as well, and they're going to be making sure that people are not leaving and going out to other places, which is smart because then the COVID, you know, players can't be getting COVID going out and they'll get in trouble if they do leave. The problem with the NFL is that the NFL is, what, 5 months? You can't keep NFL players in a bubble for 5 months. I don't think it'll happen. So I think that that's going to be a big setback that the NFL might face when trying to restart up again. So the NBA is back, though. And, you know, it's really exciting that we're finally going to get some real sports back. Noah, take us through what the NBA is going through right now and how that's going to shape up with the season.
Yeah, so like you said, NBA is coming back. They're in the bubble right now. No COVID cases, which is great. They seem to be in good spirits over there being in the bubble. There were some concerns there that they'd be isolated from their families and it'd be a little tough for these players, which I'm sure it comes with its hardships. You know, there are some ups and downs just being in this quarantine scenario. But a week from tomorrow, July 30th, will be opening night for the NBA. The Utah Jazz are playing the Pelicans, the New Orleans Pelicans, and then the Clippers are going up against the Lakers. So those are two great games. Obviously, Clippers-Lakers is that LA matchup. And then Jazz versus the Pelicans. Everyone wants to see Zion coming back from the restart, so that's why the NBA is pushing for that game. But the first few weeks of the NBA restart are going to almost play out as, like, you know, seeding games, if that makes sense. Just a little bit to get their legs underneath them. And then they'll get back into the full playoff swing there. But it's good to have NBA coming back. Obviously, the bubble is working out as, I don't want to say as best as possible, but it's clearly better than some players or owners had expected. So that's a big positive. And for the fans, too. I mean, you get NBA basketball back. Granted, there's no one in the stands, but at least we're going to be able to watch on TV.
Yeah, that's going to be really great. Just got a notification on my phone. The Dodgers are close to a deal with Mookie Betts. It's going to be somewhere between $350 and $400 million for a 10-year deal, which is pretty crazy. He is one of the best players in baseball, though, and definitely well-deserving of it. And speaking of baseball, baseball actually just came back. They were doing some games. I know the Mets and the Yankees were playing each other, and it, you know, that's kind of nice. You saw some players, they were wearing face masks when they were up at plate and batting. It's, you know, it's really cool. It shows that they could even, you know, baseball is one of those games where you can social distance, maybe, you know, in the dugout might be a little bit harder, but when you're actually in the field and things like that, you're able to perfectly play and not really be close to anybody else. I saw a rule where if a pitcher throws and strikes somebody out and they throw the ball around the bases, they have to then retire that ball. Also, pitchers are not allowed to lick their fingers when they want to pitch. They have to keep a damp rag in their back pocket. So baseball's back, and it's great. It's good to see. But the NHL is coming back as well. It's starting up next week. They're going to have some exhibition games, and it's really cool to see it come back. And I think that, you know, these games will be good. Noah, the exhibition games, what do you expect to find or see from these games compared to the qualifying rounds that are going to happen the week after?
Yeah, I mean, with the exhibition games, it'll be kind of what's going on right now with inter-squad scrimmages. I don't know if every team's going through that, but I know that I've watched the Penguins. They've actually live-streamed a few of their inter-squad scrimmages. So I don't necessarily want to say that the intensity isn't going to be as high, but obviously I think players and coaches are trying to understand they don't want to injure each other before they get into the playoff format. I feel like there's a little bit of respect there amongst the teams, so they probably just want to run through some game scenarios, mix up the lines, make sure they're seeing what guys play well with others, if the chemistry's there, and just trying to get their legs back underneath them from a conditioning standpoint so that when time comes for the actual playoff format to start, I feel like all teams are going to be ready and they don't want to have anyone injured. So it'll be good for teams to play each other and get back into these few games just to get them up to speed and get them ready for the restart. I mean, it's a good thing that sports are back. I don't know about you, but just with everything that's going on, you feel like the days just kind of blend together. Like, you don't know what day it is. Days turn into weeks, but now with sports coming back, you actually are like looking forward to a specific day. It's like, oh, next Thursday or next Friday, like this team's playing. So it's good to have all of the sports coming back at the same time too. I feel like in a month or so, there's just going to be so much on TV with MLB, NBA, and NHL at the same time. I feel like it's going to be pretty great.
It is. It is. And I'm really excited for it. Like you said, you know, all sports are going to be back at once and it's really going to occupy our time. It's going to be something great. I also, there was one last thing in the news that the Minnesota Vikings owner was looking to possibly purchase the Minnesota Timberwolves. And then he would essentially own the Vikings and the Timberwolves. What do you think about that, Noah? What do you think about one guy owning two sports franchises? Do you think that that might divert his attention a little bit, or do you think it doesn't really matter from an owner's standpoint?
From an owner's standpoint, it just really depends on how he runs the organization. I mean, some owners are more or less involved with their sports teams, and that could be good or bad depending on the GMs that they have running the show there. I mean, you look at a guy like Belichick who pretty much runs the Patriots, but he always has Kraft in his ear versus the Rooney family who's extremely involved in at least player scouting and stuff like that. I mean, they're very involved. So it's, I don't know what his style is over there in Minnesota, but if he's just running the two franchises and he's giving the GMs of those teams the majority of the control, I feel like it could actually work out. Maybe one day he'll buy the Twins too, who knows, and maybe he'll just own all of Minnesota sports teams, but it's really just the style of how he wants to run the show there. And if he just wants to be sort of a manager, if he actually wants to be involved in the day-to-day of those franchises. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, if he's able to purchase the team, and what would happen after that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, another thing, I keep saying one last thing, but there's just so much that's happened now that it's Wednesday. All these rookies are now getting their rookie deals. And I think that it's like, you look at some of these rookie deals, most of them are in the range, like high teens for like a 4-year deal. Like, I think Mekhi Becton, the offensive tackle that the Jets drafted, I think he got like a $16 million deal for 4 years. Like, that is absurd, especially if they get a really good player. And then you have a 5th-year option on him because he's a first round pick. Like, some of these guys are just, you're going to get them at such a good deal because they're rookies. I think that it kind of like shows teams that the importance of drafting well versus going ahead and signing a free agent in the offseason. It was a 4-year, $18.45 million deal. It's like, if you can get a guy, you could never get a free agent, especially if he's got really good talent. You can never get a free agent for that little of a contract. Just shows the importance of drafting and taking a chance on a guy, especially if you have good scouts or things like that. Some teams are really good with it. Like, Pittsburgh rarely uses the free agent system. Most of the big guys that they have, they always draft. Some teams are really like that, other than, you know, you look at the Jets. The Jets are always looking for free agents. They don't really have a good draft. A lot of the guys that they have, I mean, they drafted Sam Darnold, but he really hasn't had the protection or the weapons to really thrive there in New York. But some of the teams, you know, I think the importance of drafting is something that might get a little overlooked by some teams. And, you know, it's always nice to get a big free agent signing, but you have to look, like, the statistics on players who get a second or third contract, especially at certain positions like the cornerback position. If you have a corner that's on his third contract, he's really not going to play at that good level. I mean, look at Josh Norman. Like, Josh Norman was championship level. He had one, maybe two good years in Carolina. Then he went to Washington and he stunk. And then he's on his third contract. One of the guys that, you know, people had at the forefront of the cornerback position, one of the top guys in the league, he's on Buffalo now and no one's even talking about him. He's aside Tre'Davious White, and because, you know, his play is just really deteriorated. But if you get a good rookie, rookies are always trying to prove themselves. They're always trying to get that new deal. You get a bunch of good rookies on a four or five years, and you're really, you know, your team's cooking right there, especially with the cap space. That's just a perfect scenario right there to be able to draft really well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's going to be important just for every team going forward, essentially with like what you see with a Patrick Mahomes type contract. That's one player that's eating up a large chunk of the cap space. So it's going to be really important for those teams going forward that they're going to draft well and get at least one to two really solid players on good rookie deals. Because that's the other thing, too, is the majority of your draft picks, they're not going to pan out and you're not going to sign them to that next deal, or they're not even going to be able to be a starting caliber player for you. A lot of teams whiff on it, regardless of if they're going with a good draft strategy or not, because some teams accumulate a lot of draft picks. But if you don't draft and if you don't scout right, then those draft picks aren't, they're essentially worthless. I feel like free agency, I feel like there's definitely some value in it, but it's more for one or two plug and place pieces. You might have like a really solid base with your current team. Maybe your offense just needs that one wide receiver, that one running back. You can go out and get a guy in free agency like that and not necessarily waste a draft pick on it. I feel like that's what free agency is for. I don't feel like it's what the Jets use it for, where they actually try to build a team out of it, where they'll sign multiple free agents who are coming off of rookie deals or they're already on going into their third contract. Like you said, the performance and the stats there, it's just not going to be as good as when they were in the beginning of their careers, because they don't necessarily have much to prove. They might just be going for the money at that point. So teams have different strategies of how they want to build their rosters, but I think you and I would both agree that building through the draft is the way to go.
And like you said, with Patrick Mahomes, I mean, what are they paying him now? Like $45 million a year on average? They just signed Chris Jones last week to a contract, 4 years, $85 million. If you do that per year, saying that, you know, let's say the contract started next season, the cap space per team is $188 million. You're tying up 30% of your entire team cap in one defensive tackle and a quarterback. Like, that is pretty absurd. Who else are you going to pay? You know, you got 52 guys on a roster. You need to pay everybody else, especially if you want good help around them. That's kind of why people like Tom Brady always took team-friendly deals, because he cares more about winning and surrounding himself with good talent rather than breaking the bank of a team and getting paid. And, you know, that's the difference between winning championships and not winning championships. So I guess time will tell if the Chiefs can win another championship with Patrick Mahomes in this huge deal. But it's time to move on to the second half of the show here, where we're going to do some team comparisons. We're going to do roster comparisons, and we're going to say which team is going to have a better season next year. In Noah and my opinion, it's going to get a little heated. We pick teams that we're going to debate and that we don't agree on. So let's start right off the bat, big one here. You know, the Bucks have a revamped roster. The Falcons, not so much. I mean, they got a few new pieces. They lost a few pieces, but, you know, both teams are in the NFC South. Who do you think is going to have a better season, the Bucks or the Falcons?
Yeah, it's tough because they're in the division together. So pretty much if one team dominates the division games, it gives them a huge leg up on where they're going to finish in the standings. Even though they do have a first-year quarterback in terms of first year on the team, I am going to go with the Bucs. I feel like they're going to edge them out. It's a close one here for me, because I feel like both teams have pretty similar identities. You know, their secondaries last year were just atrocious. Teams could air it out on them, and they both can air it out as well. I mean, you saw what the Bucs could do with Jameis Winston. I feel like they're not going to throw for as many yards, but they're going to have an absolutely just dominant pass attack there with Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, you know, now Gronk. They still have OJ Howard and those guys. So, but in, go with the Falcons, they have Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Russell Gage, now Hayden Hurst to replace Austin Hooper. They might have a little better run game in Atlanta there with Todd Gurley now, but I feel like the Bucs have a better front seven to stop that better run game. So, like I said, I feel like it's going to be a close one here, but I'm going to take the Bucs around the 10-6 mark And I'm going to put the Falcons around the 8-8, 9-7 mark. Who do you think?
I'm going to disagree with you here. I mean, every year, this is one of my faults. Every year I always pick the Falcons to be a decent team. And last year I did, and they started off like crap, but then they picked it up towards the end of the season and they actually finished off really well. I'm going to go, you know, I think the Falcons are going to have a better team. Look, if you look at the wide receivers, and quarterback, I mean, you know what? I'm going to give it to Tampa because Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, to me, they're kind of the same. I mean, one guy takes more chances. One guy is more systematic. But when you look at the receiving threats, the combination of Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, OJ Howard, and Gronk is better than Julio, Calvin Ridley, and Hayden Hurst. But I mean, that's not to say that receiving core is bad. So I'll definitely give the offensive weapons. I'll give that to the Tampa Bay Bucks. The defensive line, though, I mean, you're comparing some really good players. You have, you know, the Falcons brought in Dante Fowler. They were able to keep Tack McKinley. I mean, they have some really good players down there. Grady Jarrett, who was one of the best defensive tackles in the league last year. You know, they have some really good talent there. The Bucs still have Vita Vea, Ndamukong Suh, Shaq Barrett, and they have Lavonte David at linebacker. But I feel like the Falcons, they have just a really good defense there. They got Deion Jones back at the linebacker position. Where the Falcons really fall, and I think that this is going to be one of their downfalls, is the secondary. But the Bucs do not have a good secondary either. So I think that's kind of comparative right there. The Bucs and the Falcons both have pretty sketchy secondaries. I will give the offensive weapons a little bit edge to the Bucs just because they have more of them. I mean, Julio is like Mike Evans and maybe a quarter to a half of Chris Godwin. But I mean, Chris Godwin's way better than Calvin Ridley. Not to say that he's bad. But at the running back position, I think Todd Gurley is better than Ronald Jones, who they have leading the Tampa Bay Buck backfield. But you know what? I'm going to go with the Falcons going to be a one game better. I think it's going to be one, maybe two games. I think they're going to be better than the Bucs. I think they might be a 10-6 team, 10-6, 9-7 maybe. And I think the Bucs might be a little less. I think the Bucs are being hyped up a little bit much, kind of like the Browns were last season. And then they kind of fell flat on their face. So I'm going to go Falcons going to edge them out here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to definitely agree with you in terms of giving it to the running back with Todd Gurley. He's absolutely better than Ronald Jones. Then we mentioned the secondaries. They were both bad last year, but I just did a little bit of quick look up there. PFF, who we mentioned multiple times, we always use their grades. We feel that they're very accurate and it's very quality content there. They ranked the secondaries of teams through week 17 last year. And they were both in the bottom half. Tampa Bay actually did edge out Atlanta, though. They were ranked 19th, and Atlanta was ranked 25th. So both very below average secondaries there. They didn't do much to address those. I know Atlanta did draft AJ Terrell in the first round, so that will be a big plus for them if he can come in and actually play at a pro level there. But, yeah, I mean, they're both very similar, and they're both right around there. I don't feel like it's right or wrong to take either team. It's really just preference. But before we move on to the next one, I just want to ask you, what do you think the division games are going to play out as? Do you think they'll split with each other? Do you think one team will edge out the other and take both games? I feel like they'll split. I don't know which game it'll be in terms of home field advantage or whatever, but I feel like they'll split.
Yeah, I agree there. I think they're going to split as well. When you talk about the other division games, I think, you know, the Bucks always, especially when they had Jameis, they always stole one from the Bucks were always able to steal one from the Saints. So I think that the Bucks might be the Saints one, might split there. The Falcons are probably going to split with the Saints too. I do not think both teams are going to sweep the Panthers though. I feel like the Falcons might be able to edge them out here. I think that the Falcons might be able to sweep them. I think the Bucks might drop one. Just by the history of the Panthers. But yeah, I think it's going to be pretty dead even there. I mean, both teams, that division has some really, really tough games coming up. because they both have to play just a bunch of playoff teams from last year. I mean, they open the Falcons open the season playing the Seahawks. Like, that's not an easy game. They got to go Seahawks, Cowboys. They play the Packers, the Vikings. I mean, obviously the Saints. And then they got to play the Chiefs at the end of the season. Like, it's going to be a really tough, really, really tough schedule for them. But the Bucs are playing the same guys, so I think that those are really good comparisons there. And I do think the Falcons are going to edge them out a little bit. Let's move on to the next one. The Texans and the Cardinals. Who do you think is going to be better this season?
Yeah, this one's, again, they have very similar identities. Both have very below average offensive lines. There's a lot of moving parts there. But they do have mobile QBs who we know can sling it. Kyler Murray in his rookie season last year, 20 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, threw for over 3,000 yards. I mean, I think he exceeded expectations a little bit just because those stats combined with what he can do on the ground, we know he can run. It's going to be a big plus for them moving forward. And they have D-Hop now, which is a huge improvement to that receiving corps because they already have Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald, Andy Isabella, and they're getting a guy that Mark loves back from injury, Hakeem Butler, huge.
He's my guy.
6'5", can really just go up and high point the ball. So their offense is going to be potent along with that little run attack they have with Kenyon Drake. And they did lose David Johnson, but they feel Kenyon Drake can come in and take that role just as well. And then you go with the Texans. They do have David Johnson now, so it's going to be a little bit of a clash there. They have Deshaun Watson. We know what he can do on the field. They have Brandon Cooks, Will Fuller, Kenny Stills, which is a very solid receiving corps after losing DeAndre Hopkins. So it's kind of funny that the Texans and Cardinals traded weapons there. One gets D-Hop and one gets David Johnson. But I do feel like the Texans are in an easier division. The Cardinals just have probably the toughest division in football to play in. I feel like the Texans are probably going to edge them out. I don't know if the Texans are actually going to be a playoff team again. I feel like they'll always finish around in between that 8-8, 10-6 mark. So that's where I'm going to have them again this season. And the Cardinals, I don't see them being more than an 8-win team in the division that they're in and the rest of the schedule that they have to play. So I'm going to go with the Texans here.
You know what? I actually, before the show, was thinking, you know what? The Texans is the good pick here. I'm going to switch my opinion. I think the Cardinals, you know, their rosters, when you went through them, they compare very well to each other. You know, the wide receiver is probably the position where the Cardinals might edge them out just a little bit just because they have D-Hop now and Christian Kirk and Fitz. You know, the health concerns between Kenny Stills, Brandon Cooks, and Will Fuller is really what's going to determine it, what the Texans do this season. But if you look at the schedule for the Cardinals, I mean, they play the NFC East. So you got the Cowboys, you got the Eagles, the Giants, and the Redskins. I mean, they're probably going to win at least two of those games. They could win three of those games. They have to play the AFC East. So, I mean, you're talking the Pats, Dolphins, Bills, and Jets. I mean, they could win three of those games, too. That's like six games right there out of division. And I don't think that they're going to drop all their games to the Niners, the Rams, and the Seahawks. I mean, they went into Seattle last year and was able to pull off a win against the Seahawks. So I think that they'll be able, you know, I think they might be able to muster up an 8-win season. I think easily they can muster up an 8-win season, maybe 9 wins. I mean, Ryan was on the show last week, and that's his team this year is the Cardinals. He thinks that they can get to 8 wins. I think they can, too. I think they can get 8 wins, maybe even a winning record this year, just because their schedule is pretty easy, and they have a bunch of new weapons. I think Kenyon Drake, they really like him. They were comfortable letting David Johnson go. So, yeah, I'm actually going to disagree with you. I'm going to go Cardinals just based on their schedule. And I think that, like you said, both offensive lines struggle. Both have mobile QBs. And, you know, they have decent weapons on both sides of the ball. Their defenses, you know, I might give the defensive edge just to the Cardinals just because they were able to draft Isaiah Simmons. They still have Chandler Jones, Hassan Reddick, Buda Baker, Patrick Peterson. They got a bunch of pieces over there that can really help them. So I think that I'm going to give it to the Cardinals, actually.
It's funny that that you switched there because a few shows ago we were talking about Bill O'Brien and if he's on the hot seat or not, and you had mentioned an interesting stat that he never really is finished with a bad record, even though everyone kind of throws him into that hot seat category, and I can't see them finishing outside of, like I said, that 8-8, 10-6 range. And you say that their schedule isn't as hard as at least I believe it is. I just don't think that they have the most complete team, and they're going up against a lot of tough defenses, even though that, let's say, the Bills and the Patriots and the Dolphins and all those teams over there in the AFC East, they don't have potent offenses. I feel like the Cardinals' offenses outmatch them clearly. But the Cardinals struggled against good teams and teams with good defenses last year. They went 1-5 in their division. The Seattle Seahawks are the only team that they beat that had a winning record in their entire schedule. And the rest of the teams that they beat were the Bengals, the Giants. They tied the Lions. Who else did they play? They beat the Browns. Those aren't stud teams right there. I mean,
right.
So I don't know if Kyler's going to be able to overpower some of these defenses he's going up against. I feel like they're going to be in a lot of games, but what do you think that their record is going to be if you feel like they're going to beat the Texans? Even if the Texans don't end up beating the Cardinals, do you feel like they'll end up around that 8-8, 10-6 mark?
Yeah, I think the Texans could end up in that. You know, they might be a 7-win team, an 8-win team. When we did our division winners the other week, I did not have the Texans winning the division. I just don't think that the Texans are going to be able to edge it out this year. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm kind of relying on the potential of the Cardinals and Kyler Murray. I'm looking at their schedule now, and while this may not be that important, I mean, you got to look. I was just thinking in my head, I'm like, the Arizona Cardinals on the west side of the country, and they're playing all East Coast teams. Like, they're going to be playing at home a bunch to start the season, and then they got to go on the road to Carolina, then they got to go back to the East Coast. They got to go play the Jets. Then they got to go out and play the Cowboys. Then they're home for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, excuse me. Then they're on the road against Seattle. Then they got to go back out to the East Coast to play the Pats. Then they're at home against the Rams. Then they got to go back out to the East Coast to play the Giants. It's like they're literally flying back and forth across the country playing home and away games. I think that does play a little bit of a role in you know, being taxing on the players and things like that. That's also kind of another reason why I think the NFL might have some struggles with the COVID, because look at just this one team. It's traveling across the country to different hotspots in different cities every other week. And that's kind of, you know, that could kind of hurt them, especially with trying to contain the virus. But let's move on to the next two teams. Let's do Broncos Chargers. Who are you taking here?
Yeah, I mean, like, everyone is so high on the Broncos after the draft and with this little emergence of Drew Lock here. And he did have a very solid year down the stretch. He won 4-1 in the last five games that he started with the Broncos. They have Jerry Jeudy now. They added KJ Hamler through the draft, and they added Melvin Gordon to complement Philip Lindsay in that backfield, and their defense is still pretty solid. So going with the Chargers here, though, that's who I'm going to take, because I don't feel like they had a complete team last year. They were very injured in terms of on the defensive side of the ball. They're getting a lot of players back. I feel like their edge rush and their pass rush is still one of the top teams in the league. And they were on the defensive side of the ball a lot because their offense couldn't stay on the field. And they still ended up in the top 10 in the league in terms of pressures. So I'm going to go with the Chargers here. Even though they do have a rookie QB, I feel like they're actually going to start the year out with Tyrod Taylor, who a lot of people aren't high on, but I feel like he's a great game manager. He's not going to win or lose you games. I feel like he's just going to give the team enough chance to stay in the games, and they're going to let the defensive side of the ball sort of take care of the rest. They are in an extremely tough division, though. I mean, the Chiefs are obviously the favorite. I feel like they outmatch the Raiders. Both them and the Broncos outmatch the Raiders. And I feel like it's just going to come down to what team is going to be able to dominate those two division games between the Broncos and the Chargers there. So who do you think, Mark? Do you think Broncos or Chargers?
You know what? I'm going to go Broncos here just because, I mean, you're going to have a new QB behind center for the Chargers. And I think that one of the most important things is going to be keeping him upright and protecting him. PFF ranked all the offensive lines coming into 2020. They got the Denver Broncos at 14, middle of the pack. I mean, everyone knows that Garrett Bowles has just, he leads the league in penalties. He's a decent player. He got drafted pretty high. He's a decent player. They did get Graham Glasgow in free agency to help shore up that offensive line. But I mean, if you look at the Chargers offensive line, they're ranked 30th in the league. That's not really good for whoever's going to be back there, whether it be Tyrod Taylor or the new rookie, Justin Herbert. That's going to kind of hurt them a little bit. But I think that the Broncos, you know, it all is going to rely on Drew Lock. Everyone knows that Jerry Jeudy's going to come in. He can ball. And KJ Hamler is going to come in. He can blaze down the field. Cortland Sutton is one of my favorite wide receivers this season. I think he has so much potential and is really good. Noah Fant is looking to have a bounce back season after an average rookie year. But look on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, they got rid of Chris Harris, but they brought in A.J. Boye. They have Chubb coming back. They have Von Miller still there. I mean, they have a lot of weapons on that defense that can really, really help them. So I think the Broncos, they have Justin Simmons. I totally forgot about him. One of the great safety in the league, top five. So I think the Broncos just have more weapons, more youth. And I think that offensive line could be the difference maker between these two teams, just because they're both going to have young QBs. The Chargers might have Tyrod Taylor, but I don't think he's as mobile as he used to be. And, you know, when you have QBs that are not the best, you know, you have a Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson doesn't need an offensive line because he can do it all on his own. But, I mean, when you put Tyrod Taylor back there, can he really carry the weight of the whole team and, you know, be chased around every single play because the offensive line isn't that good? I don't really know. I don't really think so. So I think that could be a really big difference maker between these two teams. Also, PFF also ranked the defensive lines of the two teams. Broncos at 7, Chargers at 9. So I think that, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, especially the defensive line, it's really comparable between the two. That's not really going to be a huge difference maker there. It might just be, you know, can Von Miller come back to his prior performance and those, you know, when he had that unbelievable season when they went to the Super Bowl that year and won. So I think it's really going to come down to the offensive line play here. But, you know, Broncos are my pick to, you know, if Patrick Mahomes goes down this season, God forbid, the Broncos are my pick to take that spot and win the AFC West. I think that that's, you know, and you can actually get great odds on that right now for the Broncos to win that division. Throw a few bucks down on that because, you know what? Every team is one injury away from just being like a crapshoot. And if Patrick Mahomes, God forbid, goes down, you know, the Denver Broncos could really step up and really take that AFC West crown there. You know, I do not think that, you know, the Chargers are they're going to be the ones competing with the Broncos if the Chiefs are out of the way. But, I mean, I don't think the Raiders really are going to make a difference in that division.
Yeah, you know, interesting that you mentioned that, you know, every team is one injury away from sort of going down. And I feel like that is how the Chiefs are. They did do well without Pat Mahomes when he's been injured in the past. But that's because I feel like the opponents they faced weren't that great. And will they be able to keep up that momentum for an entire season? Let's say his injury lasts for a whole year. No, I don't think so. And I do feel like you said, it's going to be between the Chargers or the Broncos to win that division if some injury happens to Pat Mahomes, which, like you said, God forbid, we don't want that to happen. But an interesting, you mentioned the offensive lines too. The Chargers offensive line is pretty bad. And when you mentioned the pass rush, Bradley Chubb and Von Miller, if they go up against a really bad offensive line like that and they're able to, you know, make some great plays and get off the line quick, I mean, it's going to wreak havoc on Tyrod or Justin Herbert or whoever's back there for the Chargers. So that's a good point that you bring up there. But I feel like both teams are going to be close, but we'll agree to disagree here with the Chargers and Broncos.
And going back to the backup situation there, I think that the Chiefs still have Matt Moore as their backup, and he did have to play a few games. He played 3 games last year. I mean, he did decent. He threw for 100 yards, 250, and 275. You know, he lost one of those games, but with those kind of weapons, he was able to really, you know, he was kind of able to produce. He threw a total of 4 touchdowns over those 3 games, so that's pretty decent. So I think that he could keep it afloat, but if they were to rely on him, I do not think that they would be able to really, you know, be a real playoff contender if they had to rely on Matt Moore for a full season. But we got 2 more comparisons left. Let's go here. Steelers-Bills. This was a great game last year. Sunday night football game. The Bills were able to edge out the Steelers here, but who do you think is going to have a better season, the Steelers or the Bills?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the Steelers have the easier schedule rating this year, but I do feel like teams are under, or not teams, analysts are undervaluing how good that Bengals offense is actually going to be if Joe Burrow can be relatively successful. And obviously, if Baker returns to how he played in his rookie season, that offense is going to be pretty potent as well. The Bills sort of match up well, again, with all of the other teams in their division, mainly because they have a very solid defense just all around with their front seven and an even better secondary, in my opinion, with Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, and Tre'Davious White. And a lot of the teams in that division aren't going to be great on the passing attack. I mean, you look at the Dolphins, Fitzmagic can throw the ball, but is he going to be able to win games? And is he as dynamic as a Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers or a Pat Mahomes? Absolutely not. And they don't necessarily have that great of weapons. I know DeVante Parker and Albert Wilson are solid weapons, but they're not absolutely studs. And Cam Newton has had his struggles in the past with throwing the ball down the field. He's not necessarily the most accurate thrower. And then going to the Jets with Sam Darnold, I mean, do you think that Breshad Perriman and Jamison Crowder are going to be enough to get through that Bills secondary? Absolutely not. So they match up extremely well with all the opponents in their division. Whereas the Steelers, even though they do have a very stud defense as well, they're facing a lot of very solid air attacks. So just because of those division opponents, I feel like I might go with the Bills here, just because I feel like they have a much easier schedule with those six games than the Steelers would. I feel like the Steelers might be a more complete team getting Ben Roethlisberger back, but there's a lot of doubts and a lot of questions surrounding his arm coming back. He's thrown in the offseason. He looks great, but is that going to translate to on the field? If Big Ben doesn't come back as he was 2-3 years ago when he had AB, I mean, I don't think the Steelers are going to do any better than, let's say, 9-7. So I'm going to go with the Bills here. They're very similar teams, but I feel like the Bills are going to edge out the Steelers by probably 2 wins.
I'm going to have to disagree with you here again. Just because I think, you know, I agree with you that, you know, it's all going to rely on Big Ben. It all is going to say, you know, if Big Ben's not healthy, Pittsburgh did not fix the quarterback situation. They're going to go back to Mason Rudolph. And, you know, can they pull off another 8-8 season? Probably not. I mean, that was really relying on the defense. The defense did get better. I mean, they have PFF ranked the Steelers defensive line number one in the league. TJ Watt, Bud Dupree, Stephon Tuitt, Cam Hayward. I mean, it is really, really good. They're off the Pittsburgh's offensive line, top 10 in the league. Buffalo on both of those, bottom half of the league. It's kind of like, I think that Buffalo, you know, when you get into the fundamentals, they got good playmakers. They got Tre'Davious White, Tremaine Edmonds, Micah Hyde. I mean, their defense has good players. I just think that the Steelers are more well-rounded. They have better players at all the positions, like the cornerback position. Steven Nelson does not get the respect that he doesn't have the interceptions that the other guys do. But when you talk about targeted versus receivers and completion percentage on his side of the field, he's up there with the best of the corners in the league. You have at the safety position, I mean, Minkah Fitzpatrick, everyone knows he's great. At the linebacker position, you have Devin Bush. And on the defensive line, I mean, just went through it. It's absolutely absurd. Offensively, bringing in Chase Claypool in the draft, Juju, Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, and James Washington, it's going to be, you know, we'll see how they all work together. And then they brought in Eric Ebron over the offseason. So they have some really good weapons there. James Conner's coming back off injury. So, I mean, I feel like all these guys got a lot of guys entering contract years, a contract year. A lot of these guys are going to want to perform. So I think that, you know, it comes down to the hunger and the want. I think that you got to go with Pittsburgh here just because they have more talent, I feel like. But like I said, and like you said, it comes down to Big Ben being healthy. So if Big Ben can be healthy, it's going to be Pittsburgh. If he goes down, Buffalo's going to beat him out. I think Pittsburgh could be a 9-10 win team here. But I do think Buffalo's going to win the NFC East. I do not think it's going to be the Pats. I'll ride that. I think the Pats, again, I'm going to reiterate, even after getting Cam Newton, an 8-8 win team at the most. But I think that Buffalo is definitely going to win the AFC East here.
Yeah, you know, You mentioned the offense with the Steelers. I forgot to sort of mention the offense with the Bills. With a healthy Big Ben and with a healthy James Conner, too, that's the big question there. If those two can stay healthy, I'll probably say that the Steelers will edge out the Bills just in terms of where they finish. But I haven't seen James Conner play a healthy full season yet, and I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. I still feel like he'll get injured there. So they're going to have to sort of play a week-to-week basis with that backfield. And with Josh Allen there over with the Bills, talking about their offense, they did add Stephon Diggs, which is a great weapon down the field for them. And they have John Brown and Cole Beasley there who are also very reliable targets. But Josh Allen has his problems with accuracy. He did make strides last year from his rookie season to his sophomore year. But is he going to be as accurate as a healthy Big Ben? I don't think so. But it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, if it's a healthy Big Ben, I'll agree with you with the Steelers. If not, I feel like I'm going to go with the Bills.
Yeah. All right, last one, and then we got to wrap it up. We're running a little bit late here. But last one, Tennessee-Minnesota. I've been riding Minnesota this whole offseason. I do not think Minnesota is going to be that good. 8-win team at the most, probably a 7-win team. I think they might finish third in that division. But, you know, who are you going to pick here, Tennessee or Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, this one's a tough one. I feel like they're also very similar because they both – I don't want to say that they both defer to running the ball, but Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry are the two biggest stars on that team, in my opinion. Minnesota did lose Stephon Diggs. They still have Adam Thielen there, and they added a receiver through the draft to replace him. So, and then Kirk Cousins and Ryan Tannehill, in my opinion, they're very similar. They're not going to win you games, but they're not going to lose you games either. They're both very accurate. They're going to make decent decisions, and they're just going to get the ball to their playmakers and see what happens. I mean, in Tennessee, they have A.J. Brown there, but they're going to run the ball with Derrick Henry. So it really comes down to the defensive side of the ball. Like you said, the Vikings, I feel like, are a little overvalued. They're currently favored to win the division. I still think it's the Packers' division to lose. And I don't think they're going to be as good on the defensive side of the ball this year. They did lose some key pieces in the offseason, and I don't know if they've done enough to replace those. But I don't think Tennessee's defense is any more overpowering than Minnesota's. So I feel like it's going to be very close. I feel like they're both going to finish within one game of each other. I'm going to give the edge to Minnesota here just because I feel like with Kirk Cousins, we've seen him succeed on multiple teams, and I don't feel like he's going to have that big of a drop off. You've said it yourself with Ryan Tannehill. We don't know if we're going to get the same Ryan Tannehill. I mean, he did have a very solid year for them with their playoff run, but is he going to be the same this year? I mean, we haven't seen him prove it. So that's why I'm going to give it to Minnesota.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to disagree with you here just because I'm not high on the Vikings, but you do make some good points here. I mean, they're Vikings and the, you know, and the Titans, both at the QB position, they're very similar. I don't think one is particularly more talented than the other. I do think that the defenses for these teams, I mean, you've got some pretty big Pro Bowlers on that Vikings defense, Danielle Hunter, Harrison Smith, Anthony Harris is now coming into form. And the Titans did lose Jarrell Casey. So I think that could hurt them a little bit, but they do still have Rashawn Evans back there. They brought in Vic Beasley. They do have some really good talent on the offense. I mean, obviously Derrick Henry, they just signed him to a new contract, which by the way, I think was really good. It's $12.5 million a year for Derrick Henry, which is great. AJ Brown is really coming into shape. Corey Davis is still there. When you look at the Titans secondary, that's kind of where it might be a little, you know, they lost Byard back there. They have Jonathan Joseph. They brought in Adoree Jackson. They still have Malcolm Butler, who really is, you know, he's really average. I mean, he's not as good as people thought. My mistake. They still do have Kevin Byard. They do have Kenny Vaccaro back there. So it's going to be really close. But for me, like you said, it really comes down to the running back position. And as of right now, Dalvin Cook has no plans to play for the Vikings unless he gets another deal. He's not even showing up to training camp now. So I think that that's kind of – that might be something that could impact them seriously here if he doesn't show up to the team I mean, Derrick Henry's a beast and Dalvin Cook is as well, but he's an integral part of that offense. If he's not there for a majority of the season or even for the season start, that's really going to hurt the Vikings. And I just think that the Titans, you know, they have a lot of momentum. They have a good thing going. They're like, you know what? We were able to make it to the AFC Championship last year. Let's keep this thing rolling. We have a roster that's good enough to make it. Keep the fundamentals, running the ball with Derrick Henry, going off play action. You got A.J. Brown who can stretch the field, you know, and I think that they have something good going there. I think that that's really what's going to put them over the top is that momentum and, you know, they're bring back a large majority of the team that they had last year. I think that that's really something that could help them a little bit more than the Vikings will. Also, I think that the Titans do have a better offensive line, which is, you know, I'm big on the offensive line. I've said that multiple times. I just think that the offensive line could really help them a little bit better, blocking for Derrick Henry, protecting for Ryan Tannehill. So, you know what, I'm going to go Titans here.
Yeah, like you said, with the questions at the running back position, they do have Alexander Mattison back there to replace Dalvin Cook, either completely or until they could get a new deal done. But obviously, Alexander Mattison versus Derrick Henry, which one are you going to take? I mean, you're going to go with Derrick Henry every day. So, and if it comes down to the offensive line, I will agree that Tennessee does have a better offensive line than the Vikings, which I don't think the Vikings is that bad. I mean, they were able to do a lot of damage on the ground last year with Dalvin Cook, and Kirk Cousins has more than enough time back there to make plays and throw it down the field to his receivers. But if it does come down to that, I would agree that without Dalvin Cook there and with a little bit of a better offensive line, Tennessee could probably finish better than the Vikings. And the Vikings do have a tougher division schedule, in my opinion. If Mitch Trubisky can play at least a fraction better than what he did last year, that Chicago defense and pass rush is very solid, as well as the Packers. And so I feel like that's better than, let's say, you know, the Colts, the Jaguars, who are sort of a train wreck right now, and the Texans. I mean, the Texans defense hasn't been extremely solid, even though they do have J.J. Watt. So, but we'll agree to disagree. I'm just going to take the Vikings here just to disagree with you. But yeah, that finishes up those team rankings and those team head-to-head matchups. I like that.
I do too. One more thing to add. I think that one of the most interesting players to watch this season is going to be Jonnu Smith, tight end for the Titans. I really like him. I like his potential, what he can do there in Tennessee. So that pretty much does it for us for this week's On the Line podcast. Follow us on Twitter. We changed our Twitter handle. It's now On the Line Takes. And we just post a bunch of content. Next week, I'm not going to be here next week. It's going to be Noah, and it's going to be our friend Arjun. He's the one that does all the graphics for us. He does a great job, so he's going to be on the show with Noah. I'm taking the week off, but Noah, it's been a pleasure this week, man. I really love doing it.
Always love doing it, man. We'll miss you next week, but yeah, I'll be running the show next week. Arjun will be on the show with us. Like you said, he does a great job. I feel like he'll do a very solid job filling in while you're out on vacation. But hope you have a good time, man, and we'll see you when you get back.
Thanks, man. See ya.